This is the Kinky Cast. This is an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 35B of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. This is the second part of our interview with Sybil Holliday, sex activist. She shares 4 decades of life stories. Now back to the interview.
Okay, now you're talking about Janus. This is the Society of Janus. It is the BDSM Kink Central organization in San Francisco.
Yeah, it's the second oldest organization in the United States. Eulenspiegel Society out of New York started a year before them. And it was started by Cynthia Slater, also a pro-dom who also hung out with bikers. There's a wonderful picture of her, a couple of wonderful pictures of her taken by Mapplethorpe, one of her across a bike and one of her astride a horse. And Cynthia was an amazing woman. And she just wanted to know, what am I doing here? And what are you doing and how can we do it safely? That's what Cynthia was all about. Let's trade knowledge and let's figure out how to do this safely. And so when I joined, it was in its fourth year. And it was still a baby organization, you know. I didn't look at it that way, right? Because I'm a newbie, and I don't know where I belong. I don't know what I like. This thing about pain is a mystery to me because, you know, I'd been beaten with chains with the bikers. I'd actually had chains swung at my back. I'm done with the black leather jackets. I'm done with pain. I'm done with mixing up sex and pain. No! And hierarchy? No, I don't know. But what had happened with Cleo at the time was so fascinating to me. And then I met people. You know, I walked into the meeting, and it was regular folk. I thought I was going to meet, you know, the equivalent of Ted Bundy. My mom did not want me to go. Oh, my God, did she not want me to go. And I went, and I met you and me, you know. The treasurer was this sweet little 70-year-old guy who just liked feet. That's all. He just liked feet. He was a sweetheart. Noni Howard was one of the orientation directors, and she was a poet. And just great people. And they were talking about things that people weren't talking about regarding sex and how to make it better and what worked and what didn't. I mean, I was a member of the Sexual Freedom League, but we weren't talking like this, in depth like this, and about things that I had no piercing. I had never in my mind ever thought that play piercing. Who thought about play piercing? I never thought that it would be fun, somebody with a needle. Now, I have to tell you one thing, however. I did give my first spanking when I was 5 years old.
So you come by it naturally?
Yes, honey, I do.
You're early bloomer.
Early bloomer. And it wasn't sexy, but it sure was controlling, and it was a punishment spanking. It was a 4.5 little-year-old girl who was a brat. My mother was a fabulous seamstress, so she got my hair and her hair done for free by this woman. And she would give this woman my clothes for her granddaughter. And the granddaughter was a pain, a royal pain. And so one day we're back in the back of the shop, and I just had it. I'd had it with her, and I was seated, and I remember it like it was yesterday. I grabbed her, and I threw her over my lap, and I pulled up her skirt, and I pulled down her panties, and I started smacking. And you know what her name was? Her name was Patty. I kid you not. You can't make this stuff up. Her name was Patty. So I smacked Patty's ass until she was yelling, and both my mom and Adele, that was the hairdresser, came in. And Adele, of course, grabbed Patty and was like, and my mother was working so hard not to laugh.
To be
working
shocked.
So hard.
Mortified.
Nobody liked Patty. And everybody was really glad that, oh, finally, Patty got a little bit of the comeuppance she so deserved. So, yes, I think I do come by it honestly.
Deep-seated kinky roots, that's what they are.
So, you know, I started going to every meeting twice a month because I figured if I don't know, if this is okay, and there's something happening, I want to go learn. So it was like going to school for me. It was really like, wow, people like getting pierced, huh? I wonder what that feels like. Oh, I mean, I went to a party. I didn't know what I wanted. I didn't want my feet rubbed. I didn't want this guy to keep bringing me drinks. He wanted to do anything, and I didn't know what I wanted. I didn't know what to tell him. I finally just told him to sit down and shut up and be cute. I had no idea. One of the first scenes I ever did was with a woman, and you know what I did? For an hour, I laid on top of her and stared at her. And later on, I said, how did you submit to that? And she goes, that was raw power. You didn't need to do anything but what you were doing. It was pure power.
So the alpha woman was still very, very, very much in there.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was just, the whole time I'm thinking, is this working? Well, I'm turned on. She turned on. Shouldn't I be doing more? Maybe not. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. I think we're just going to keep doing what we're doing here. So really, I didn't even kiss her that much. I didn't hurt her. I just pinned her.
Exerting your power over her, and she was submitting.
Over her, and it worked.
Yeah. So as time went on, you took a more active role in Janice.
Yes. I started, let's see, when did I have my first whipping? It was probably around 82. I was going to play parties, but I wasn't playing. I was just watching. Janice had parties, and a friend of Cleo's was throwing private play parties. And at the old catacombs, well, at the last catacombs on 16th Street and Capped. And I would go to those, and I would watch the fisting, and I would watch the whipping, and I would watch the bondage. And I like these people a lot. I like the intensity a lot. It was what it was missing for me in the vanilla hippie world, was the intensity. Being multi-orgasmic, I mean, I could orgasm, and my mind would be somewhere else. I'd be thinking about, you know, what do I need to shop for tomorrow? Oh, dear God, I need to focus. And with SM and with dominance, you have my 100% attention. Whereas in vanilla sex, I can wander. So the intensity was very interesting to me, and the feeling in a dungeon with 50 couples playing, or even just 25, that's 50 people playing and really playing. The private parties were invitation only, and it wasn't about your orientation. It was about how did you get along with everybody else and how do you play. So there were gay couples and straight couples and het couples all mixed up. And it was, we called it a mixed play party. It was, Cynthia Slater started them. And then Cleo started her own when Cynthia got too sick. I still didn't know where I belonged, really, except I knew two things. I knew, one, I liked to run things. I knew I wasn't a bottom, and I knew I wasn't a masochist. I knew I wasn't a masochist. And two, I knew I was. And it really was very clear about that. But I'm a top. Oh, my God, really? That's a lot of responsibility. And the people I learned from were gay men and gay women. Leathermen at the time. There were a lot of Leathermen in Janice in 1980. And through the parties, I got to meet some wonderful Leather women, Dorothy Allison, Gail Rubin, Cynthia Stute, play people you don't know that were wonderful, Pat, Calypia. And as I said, we were all just living our lives, all just having a good time. And then Samoa folded in 83. And the Outcast started in 84. I was one of the founding members. Gail had called up all these people and said, we're starting a new club. And we all met at the old Valencia Rose just across from where I live and started up the Outcast. And I had giving programs in 83. One of the first program I ever gave, all by my lonesome, and I was so nervous, was on Quickie SM. What I call fast food SM. I started carrying a pair of nipple clamps and a dildo and a rubbers and a bunch of wet wipes and, you know, disposable single use and a tissue and a Kleenex, not Kleenex, a face cloth and a bunch of plastic bags in my purse. And we'd be somewhere, back of a bus, and I just all of a sudden poop nipple clamps on you. Deal.
The first mobile toy bag.
Right. And pee. I love to play with pee. So I'd be doing things like having somebody go take a glass of wine into the bathroom, you know, white wine, dump it out, pee in it, come back, and drink that. So there was a lot of things that I discovered I like to do outside because I'm huge about outside makes me horny. It's not about being caught at all. I'm not that kind of exhibitionist. I'm a total consensual exhibitionist. It's never been. I don't want to get caught. That's horrid. It's the outside. I'm a nature lover. We can be in the city, and it's the air on my skin. I'm hornier when I'm outside.
Your voice is having that effect upon me right now. So,
yeah, the beast is just going through all kinds of contortions here. It's
that's good. I like it when men squirm.
So we are now into the mid-80s, and yes. S&M leather BDSM lifestyle is really getting a foothold in the community at this point, isn't it?
It is.
We are seeing the first magazines and the first real information starting to filter out, isn't it?
Well, I also did SFICI in 1983, San Francisco Sex Information. I also did EST in 1983. Werner Erhard, the Human Potential Movement. I did the whole shebang. Mm-hmm. And one of the things in EST that you were taught is keep your agreements, right? Tell the truth. If you can't keep your promise, remake it and give 100%. So that went into my style of dominance. We keep our agreements. We tell the truth. If we can't keep the agreements, we remake them and we give 100%. And I was very interested in where submission really, really was, because when I started to play, it became obvious to me that when I switched, I could go along with the whole entire program, including getting beaten, and not give up one teeny bit of power. You could tie me up. I had this het top, which is why I didn't play with sorry guys. Hets too many, much as tops, because they were boring. they wanted basically to do this all this stuff to me, kind of, sort of, but then have sex. And I'm like, no, you got to control my mind. We didn't even have the term dominance and submission. It was SM or BND. And if you didn't like the pain, you were a bad slave. If if you didn't obey, you were a bad slave. Maybe you weren't a slave. Maybe you were a bottom. But we didn't have any of that. It was master, mistress, slave. So in 83, I think, one of the editors, Mark Joplin, of Growing Pains, decided to change it to dominance and submission. And you'll find a chunk of literature at that time where SM is completely turned into DS. Because isn't this about power? And so there was all these panels and all this discussion about what are we doing here? He came up with a word, because the word switch had not been invented, of dominissive. He said, I'm a dominissive. I'm both. It didn't stick.
I've never heard that term before.
Well, that's because it didn't stick.
Obviously.
And switch came in a few years later.
And you were a switch at that point, or were you?
No.
You were dominant.
No. I bottomed to learn. I'm not a bottom, I'm not submissive, and I'm not masochistic. But the gay men that I admired at that time were all about the process of you start at the bottom and you become a top. And a lot of them didn't ever want to become tops, but that was some of the process. You start at the bottom, you became a top. You didn't stay a bottom. And so they were very interesting, especially to bottom two, because they didn't want me to suck their dick.
Ooh.
They wanted something else from me. They wanted my submission. They wanted me to turn over authority. I turn over authority? Are you kidding me? What? I stood up to presidents of biker clubs and said, fuck you, man. I got knocked around for it, but no, I'm not going to turn over authority.
And you just stood up to bikers 20 years earlier.
Right. Are you kidding? But I realized that there was no way I could learn what I wanted to learn if I didn't go through it, that I couldn't learn by watching. I didn't know what it felt like when you got hit with a whip, and I wasn't about to hit somebody that hard if I hadn't gone through the process. I just wasn't. And I watched men play and play, and I watched the fact that the lesbians were rougher on each other than the men were on each other. That was interesting. Women aren't afraid of blood, you know.
They aren't.
We bleed it.
You bleed right? Once a month.
That's right, and we're not afraid of it. And the play parties were a lot bloodier at the women's parties and a lot rougher in some ways. Woo, cruel. The men weren't cruel. They were rough. But they weren't cruel. Some of those women were cruel. So I didn't really want, like I said, the sky ties me up. Takes an hour. We're at a Janice party. And he said, so, how are you doing, my little one, or something absurd like that. And I said, sir, you have completely restrained body. However, sir, you have done nothing to capture my mind, sir.
Sassy, weren't you?
Telling the truth, honey. You know, you can beat it out of me. No, not really. The bikers didn't. I'll just walk away and say you're a jerk. Really.
And she's
you
tough,
have to
too.
Really have,
yeah.
Yeah. I have to have something going on here. I'm not going to give it up just for anybody.
So the wellspring of knowledge really in the SM was the gay man the gay male segment.
Absolutely,
at this point.
Of course it is. They were organizing in bars way before they had ever really figured this stuff out. Everybody's kinky in a way, you know. Unless you're really just into man on top missionary 3 minutes and that's it. Who hasn't held their girlfriend's arms down every once in a while? I got my arms held down. I didn't like it. And I didn't think to hold down his because we were all about the equality.
Uh-huh.
It was the 60s. Well, I mean, when my arms first got held down, I was in the 60s and I didn't
60s.
Like it. Yeah. Mm-mm. No, don't do that to me. But in the 80s, I agreed, I consented to have these things happen. And like I said, in the 60s, I consented just by being there. You know, I could have left early on. I didn't. Janice was fascinating to me. This whole thing about talking about what you might do ahead of time, nobody was doing that. And exploring and all these different things and having sensation without sex. Which is all very interesting and tons of fun. And so in 83, I quit the Sutter Theater because it turned New York Live. I went and did phone sex for a while. And that's when my dominant persona emerged, boom, full tilt, like out of the forehead of Hera. There she was. It was hard for me to play, actually, in person and run a scene up until that point. I am a perfectionist in a certain kind of way, and I'm a control queen. I won't say freak, but a queen in a certain kind of way. And I didn't want to do it if I couldn't do it right. And I wasn't sure that I could do it right yet. So in 83, I went to work for a phone sex company in March. And very early on, because all the information that I had, I started being one of their top doms. And I started actually dominating the guys who called up for phone sex rather than just telling the story while they masturbated. And I discovered that I have a talent for orders and telling people what to do and moving around their house and grabbing various things around their house to put here, there, and the other place. And I started having regulars. And I actually opened, did my own phone sex line for a while here in San Francisco called Sybil's Phone Freaks. And ran that for 3 months till the chargebacks got me, which is a terrible thing. People say, oh, I didn't make that phone call.
Yeah.
And then the company has to give back the money, and I had incurred a lot of them, so we didn't. They didn't have as good checking equipment as they do now. Leo had started working as a professional earlier that year, 83, and she was having a good time. And I thought, I wonder. Because, you see, dancing, I had taken what I knew in bed and taken it to the stage, and then what I learned on stage I'd brought to bed. And I wonder if I can do the same thing. I wonder if I can take what I know from my own play and bring it professionally and then learn stuff there and bring it home. I wonder if I can go back and forth that way. Like, that was, I loved on-the-job training. And then I met Mistress Corona. And she said, I'm looking for somebody to train. You want to learn how to be a pro dom?
Wow.
So we went, right? We went to the Ren Fair together. We had a great time. She watched me tease all the boys. She said, yeah, you got potential. And for a year and a half, I worked with Mrs. Corona. I was submissive to her. I worked as a professional submissive called Lily. Under her instruction, I was a middle, meaning that she would have a client and I'd be there, and she would do something to me, and the client would watch, and then I'd do the same thing to the client. And I'd have to flip back and forth. I'd have to be submissive to her, dominant over the client. Submissive to her, dominant over the client.
Certain amount of mental agility needed there.
Certainly, and I don't know that she realized what she was doing. I don't know that everybody could have done that.
It's not a switch, it's a light switch.
Yes, it felt exactly like that. That's exactly the right word. It felt like this thing that I had to flip, like AC/DC or just this thing. It was a flow of energy. The only time it was really, it wasn't hard to give up the power. That was kind of fun, to give up the power and the authority and watch this other person go, woo. But as a submissive, being submissive and having the endorphins running through me, there was a couple of times when it was hard to take the power because I'm like, I'm so fucking high. I don't really know. Okay. So that was a lot of fun. And then after a year and a half, Cleo was ready to open up her place. I was ready to go on my own too. So she moved out of the big room that had been her bedroom, moved across the street, and we opened up in 85, May of 85. We opened up our first, House of Dominance together. And she was great.
Well, what did you call this house?
We didn't call it anything, really. You know, we weren't then. That wasn't happening. She stayed with me for a little bit, and then, like I said, she went down with Fakir in the mid-'80s. It was just, you know, our dungeon. After a while, I called it Sybelle's Domain because she was gone, and I was training my own girls. And, you know, then it became fashionable to have a name. I've always been the House of Holiday. It amuses me. When I saw Big Brother and it was H-O-H, head of household.
Right, sure,
yeah.
That's me, mm-hmm. H-O-H, Holiday O'Hara, House of Holiday, head of household. Yeah. Then I started training girls working here. And I wouldn't let anybody work here who hadn't been trained by me. Those were the days. You can't do that now. And the 80s were great. I have to say that the 80s were a wonderful, other than AIDS, other than HIV, which is horrible, but for SM, what a fun time. Throwing parties, giving classes, going to classes, being on the edge of something, correcting myths everywhere I went.
What did the 90s bring to you?
The 90s were different. In 1988, I met the second love of my life. I thought I'd met the love of my life and was kind of unhappy, figuring that I wasn't going to be with him lifetime. Until in my late 30s, I decided, you know what, you're going to have more than one love of your life. The hell with that. And I put out a call. I didn't think I was going to meet anybody for about 2 years. I did some witchy-poo magic. And 2 weeks later, Bill Henkin called me up and came to my door as a client. I opened the door, and this voice, this is where the woo-woo comes in, very voice, loud voice in my head, inside my head, said, "Oh, it's you from dancing? I have an excellent internal clock. I know when 20 minutes is up. I know when an hour is up. I never ran over." 3 hours later, I go, "What time is it? Oh, my God." And Cleo's just about to break in the door thinking I must have been overpowered or something because I never run late. "We have a Janice panel we're supposed to be on." So Bill drove us after our scene, and I'll never forget looking down at him and the adoration in his eye, and I thought, "Oh, isn't that sweet?" Also, oh, he was hot. That was amazing. I never go over. What the hell? So the next time we saw each other was a week later, and he looked up at me and he told me that he loved me. This is 1988. I said, "You love space." I said, "I love you." And we got engaged in July. So the 90s were all about me and Bill and teaching, because Bill is a therapist and a teacher and an author. So I started teaching. Sybil and Bill started teaching SM 101. We taught about personas and gender, and we had a class called Service, Submission, and Slavery. And we taught for Janice. We taught for Club X down in L.A. We taught down in San Diego. We taught for San Francisco University. We taught for, actually, he came and taught once for the Exiles with me, or Outcasts. We taught. And so the 90s for me were all about teaching and my back going out. My back, I have severe crippling arthritis. And how that really manifests is I was born with crappy cartilage. You don't know it, you know, when you're a kid, you fall. You don't know that 30 years later, all the synovial fluid is going to dry up in that bone, and you're going to be in extreme pain. And since I got thrown 20 feet off a motorcycle and landed flat on my back, thank you, God, for the helmet, otherwise I'd be dead. Since I fell off a 6-foot stage flat on my back, since I got hit with chains and a crutch on my back, right in the heart chakra area, I had a carotid herniated disc, and that took me out of the picture for quite a while. Bill and I had been together for 18 months. We were the happiest mistress and slave you'd ever want to see. So from 90 to 94, I didn't have a sex drive. And he still served me. And then 94 came back, but it was different. We separated in 97, and we reconnected in 2007. We've been friends through the whole thing. But my life has been very much about that man, because I'm queer, but, you know, my interest in people is not about what you have between your legs, but what you have in your heart and what you have between your ears and how the energy is. And that man is my most beloved human being. He's bi. He had a female persona that he didn't know he had. So, you know, a great deal of the 90s were, A, recovering from my back, trying to recapture the DS, teaching with Bill, and then I got more slaves and had the usual multi-level relationship that I do. I was really involved with the Outcasts during this time, however. I was a founding member, And for 2 years I was the doorkeeper. I'm not political. I'm a rabble-rouser. I'm an activist, but I hate politics. I hate politics. Do not put me on a board. I will not be nice. I've learned. I'm on a training staff with SFISI. I'm not on the board. I hated it.
So then 2000 rolled around. I remember seeing you at the Society of Janus.
Right. Well, you know,
30th anniversary.
Fine. Yeah, business was fine in the 90s. I was okay. I was with a different man that I was with for 4 years. I also had my girl slave. And we all thought, woo, 2000, you know, new century, yay. And then in 2000, business did not pick up in the summer. See, it's been like 6 good months, 6 bad months. Business didn't pick up. And I thought, that's interesting. I wonder if we've done our job too well. I wonder if we have introduced too many people to Janus and the like, and we're just not going to see those really cool people anymore. We didn't. That summer was dead. We didn't see cool people. And Janus was doing great.
Well, Janus was doing great. In 2001, I joined Janus. That's when I moved back from Europe. Just the orientation meeting had 40 people at it every month.
Yeah, it was doing great. Business-wise, we were dying over here in the pro-dom department. And then, of course, 2001, 9/11 happened.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't having a good summer then either, but that just put the kibosh on everything, and everything started to dry up. I was also not doing well health-wise. It really hit me in 2005, but I was starting to hurt more and more. But I was still walking around. And I was going to Janus, and I had stopped being a pro in 2005. But I was going to Janus in the early 2000s and to the Exiles. And, you know, it had kind of become mainstream by then. It was in ads. Madonna had put out her book, for crying out loud. The Secretary had come out. You know, when did that come out? I mean, it was a point, especially here in San Francisco, it was just like, I remember when I didn't tell people I was a professional dominatrix, right? Even people my own age. And all of a sudden, it became cool.
And it's become cooler today than it was in the turn of the century, even.
Right. I mean, I was shocked. I'm like, really? Wow. Okay, then.
What do you think about this new cool factor? Is it positive or negative overall for the community?
Education's a good thing. It's always a good thing. But there's bad education out there, and there, you know, the 50 Shades of Grey, oh, my God. What bothers me about 50 Shades of Grey, Cleo's talked about this, is the amount of mistakes that people make after reading that book. They don't realize that that book, A, is fiction, fantasy, and B, it's full of bad information. And so there are times when I think, I'm not sure. You know, there was a reason why the mystery schools were a mystery school. You had to go through a process. You couldn't just get a book. There was a reason why back in the days, even, you know, with the Eleusinian mystery schools in Greece, you had to go through a whole entire process. Well,
there were the rites of passages for the knowledge to be passed on.
That's right. That's right. A rite of initiation, at least. And now some girl picks up a whip, wears a black nightie, and calls herself a mistress. That terrifies me.
Especially when you see they're 18 years old on FetLife and they're listed as a mistress.
I know. I laugh. I just laugh. But, you know, people were doing stuff to each other, and they didn't know what they were doing in the 1700s and the 1600s and the 1500s. People have been playing around with this for a while. I figure, okay, right? Information gets out there. People hurt each other, but maybe there's a place now where they can go once they've hurt each other. There's other places where they can learn. So even though it has really changed the professional world, I mean, there was a certain Camelot. Pat Sunlove, one of the editors of the Spectator magazine newspaper, which is where I advertised. It used to be the Berkeley Barb. She and her husband took it over, Pat Sunlove and Lane Winkleblack. And she says that the 80s were the Camelot of SM. And she's right. It was a golden period.
I tend to agree. I came in at the very tail end of the 80s.
Yes.
And I was in rural America. And yeah, I know the publications you're talking about, and it was indeed a magical time. Where the mysteries were still there.
Yes.
And the taboo nature was still very much alive.
Oh, very much alive. Very much alive. It doesn't feel, nobody feels it's taboo anymore, you know. What's left? I mean, one of the worst things a nightclub or a theater can do, I'm going to tell you, is ask male customers how they could improve. Put out a suggestion box. Because almost always, and matter of fact, I would say always, I've never seen it not, men want orgasm. They want to see more flesh. They want it all now. Well, where do you go from that? If you give them that, where do you go? There's nothing left. And the same thing is true. If you're looking for excitement and you're looking to be a rebel, well, okay, do SM, but really? It's so codified now.
There is a formula.
You know, I'm not looking for excitement that way. I never was. I've been a rebel, remember.
You started back in, what was that, 67 with your rebellion.
Right. I did my rebellion. I mean, when Cleo first told me about Janice, I laughed after I got over the shock. I said, are you kidding? I did it for real. I got kidnapped. I got sold for real. Oh, I didn't tell you that part. I got kidnapped again and sold for, what was it? 4 hits of acid and $10. Made $50. Yeah, I got sold.
And so when you hear a slave auction at the club, it's like, yeah, come on, I've been there.
Well, a bit, yeah. But I could appreciate the fun and the fundraiser quality. What happened in 2005, I was still working, okay? I had women working out of here. I had a lot of them because the business was slow. And then the rest of my body caught up with me. So I use a wheelchair almost all the time now, certainly if I go out. In 2005, I was 4. I was still walking around, and there are pictures of me at Folsom Street Fair with my girl, 2004. The winter of 2004, I was up at her place, and I couldn't not hurt. I started hurting all over. It didn't change. I came home, and from January, where I was not walking, I was walking not even with a limp. I went from no cane to a portable cane to a cane all the time to 2 canes to a quad cane to a rollator, and I bought my first wheelchair in October of 2005.
Wow.
I went downhill so fast. And by 2010, I was in enormous pain and spasming. At that time, I stopped working in 2005, and I became a hypnotherapist in 97. Because I could see the handwriting on the wall with my body. And I could tell that, yeah, you're not going to be able to wear those heels. You're not even going to be able to really swing a whip in a bit. So I became a hypnotherapist. And I did a lot of counseling for people with alternative interests, helping women find their dominant side, helping men learn that, no, you can't make your wife a dominant.
They will keep on trying forever.
Good luck with that one. Helping people, and it was a great joy in my life. I loved doing that. In 2005, the end of it, I thought, I can't do this. I cannot keep track. I am not to be the pain. Either I'm not taking drugs and I'm breathing and the pain is distracting, or I'm taking OxyContin. Yeah, OxyContin, because codeine does nothing, and I'm loaded. I can't be a therapist that way, and I can't be a dom. In 2007, I went on disability. What I have seen professionally and privately is that it's just becoming more common. There are more and more articles about us. There are more and more studies about us. There was an article in, I don't remember what, decent magazine, newspaper, about SM being the new yoga. There are studies that say that people who actually do practice consensual SM are, turns out, a little more together than other people.
Surprise, surprise. We have already knew that.
Bill and I used to really notice that you have to have something on the ball. You really do. I mean, you can be a dumb dominant. We've met couples or people that were like, oh, dear God. God bless them. Okay. But if you're going to be a dominant, and I mean a dom, I don't mean a sadist. I mean a dom, 24/7 dom. You better be thinking, and you better know the difference between dominance and abuse. That's the one thing that I've seen that makes me unhappy. I've seen a lot of abuse couched in the term of DS. And I've helped people get out of those relationships.
Well, one thing about our community is we are still an alternative, and all the alternative communities tend to attract a disproportionate number of broken souls that are looking for a place to be. And ours is but one stop on their path as they're searching.
That's a beautiful way of putting it.
Sybil, thank you for being with us tonight. This has been a great story of where your journey started and how it has come to San Francisco. And you are quite a...
I'm a hell of a broad.
That you are.
In the lifestyle in San Francisco, everybody on the West Coast knows about you, and you've been certainly in my view for a long time, and I really do appreciate who you are, and it's great to hear your story.
Well, thank you,
Thank you so much.
You be well.
Thank you, Sybil.
You're welcome, honey.
You have been listening to episode 35B of the Kinky Cast. Today we featured Sybil Holliday. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. On behalf of Woody and the Beast, I'm Max. See you next week when we hear of the intersection of swing and BDSM.